Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Thursday, the 8th of October. It is 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us as we talk about what's happening today. And there is certainly a lot to talk about, a lot of breaking news. I thought we would spend most of our time talking about the vice presidential debate, and we will, but there is breaking news this morning that we'll talk about as well. Let us introduce everybody. A reminder, you can get in on the fun. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's welcome the group. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe, and thanks for having all of us. We appreciate it.
Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. Hello, Rosemary.
Can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
I've been better. We have no power, so I'm coming to you from my car where the motor's running to keep my phone going.
Wow.
I feel like a pioneer.
Yeah, that's not good. I forgot about the power thing. Well, thank you for doing it under those circumstances. I appreciate it. We also welcome Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPA and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Hendler. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. At least I have power. I just don't have any energy for these phones.
Well, there you go. Good morning. Welcome. Linda Ellerbe is with us, Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
I am just fine, Joe. And you?
I'm okay. I am okay.
Tully?
Tully's fine. He sprained his knee, but he's doing okay.
Loved the picture of Tully getting worked on at the vet.
Yeah, he had a cold laser treatment. It was a very amusing picture because they made him wear like these Doc Brown goggles. It was quite amusing. But he's doing fine. Thank you for asking. We have a lot to talk about. Let us begin with the breaking news, which is about debates, just not the one I thought we'd talk about this morning. The Commission on Presidential Debates said on Thursday, earlier today, that the second presidential debate would be virtual because of concerns about the coronavirus. You know, because one of the participants has it. President Trump immediately dismissed the idea and said he would not participate, calling the idea and the plan ridiculous in a Fox Business interview. So here we are. There was some talk yesterday where Vice President Biden said that he would not, that he was not comfortable in a debate where they were in person. And then the commission came forward yesterday saying it was their own decision and citing the health and safety of all involved, abandoning plans on Thursday for an in-person debate in Miami scheduled for October 15th, saying that Mr. Trump and Joe Biden would instead debate from separate locations. Then the president goes on Fox Business this morning with Maria Bartiromo and said, "That is ridiculous. I am not doing this," and accused the debate commission without evidence of seeking to protect his Democratic opponent. Alan.
Well,
and everyone laughs, yes.
The problem with Trump is that he's always capable of a double, triple, quadruple fake out. So the fact of the matter is we all know that he got creamed in the first debate. Now, if you got creamed because of your behavior and what you were doing, why would you want a second debate? And so he says, okay, then I'm going to be a two-year-old and I'm going to say I'm not going to debate as if anybody's going to care. And then along comes Biden. And the question with Biden, is it bad for him not to have a second debate? On the contrary, he won overwhelmingly in the first debate. Trump made a fool of himself. So why would Biden want to give him another chance? Seems to me this is almost preordained.
I think it's for the good of the country.
Yep.
Quite frankly, I don't think we need another debate. Watching the one last night, I sat there thinking, did we really need another debate? I wasn't sure, for one thing. I am not certain there really are any undecided voters out there at this point. I don't think there's, I don't know anyone who hasn't made up their mind. Now, I'm not a statistician. That's an anecdotal sample. But it seems to me that most people have already decided. I don't see any point of continuing to debate. There is nothing to say. And the safety of human beings in this virus seems to, ought to preclude having another debate, as well as the sanity of Americans.
Many of the polls indicate that it's about 3% of people who are quote-unquote undecided, but also that those 3% of many of those, the majority of those people saying that they may not vote at all. So that's of interest.
But you know, Joe, it's a question of where they are. So, for example, in the key state of Ohio, it is a dead heat. And so, therefore, if you got 3% in Ohio, that's the difference between getting those electoral votes and not.
And it is. It's also fascinating what the strategy is of the president, and if there is one, which I'm not even sure of at this point. Rosemary,
that's the point. That's the point I would make. That this to me seems like another shoot yourself in the foot move by Trump. He's either addled from the drugs he's taking for the deadly disease he has and won't acknowledge, or he deliberately is throwing the race. First, he says, no, there's going to be no more COVID relief, all you little people out there who are supposed to vote for me. No more relief until after the election. And now he's saying no debate, which allows Joe Biden to, one, not face him, which is a plus for everybody, as you pointed out. And also, it allows him to say, I, again, are the responsible one. I am the adult in the room. I wear a mask, and when they say go virtual, I have no problem with it. Look at the man you have in the office right now. This does not, it's not true. Any way is it a plus for Trump. I don't get it. I don't think there's any strategy.
Do you think there is a possibility that he changes his mind in the next 7 days?
Oh, Alan's got that totally right. He could change it in the next 7 hours.
Right.
7 minutes.
I was going to say seven minutes.
But... Yeah. Jim Handler.
Yeah.
I was going with the 7 minutes. Yeah, you know, I agree with Alan completely that it's that 3% and where they are. But actually looking at what I can find of where they are, it's a mix. What I think is really the battle this year is to make other people stay home. That's the... That was the Republican strategy 4 years ago, and that's the Republican strategy now, is strategy one. And strategy two, the one that scares me is, you know, I thought people were being paranoid in saying that, you know, Trump is basically, his new goal is not to win the election, but to steal it. But some of the breaking news today, some of the things going on, I'm really, you know, beginning to think that's really their strategy, is just to set it up so that they can challenge everything, get everything into the courts, and then win with their Supreme Court.
I just don't understand how you do that if you are losing the amount of support. I mean, we've always talked, Alan, you've said this, that number hasn't moved. Well, we're seeing that number move
now.
It's
moving.
And it's moving, and it's moving by quite a bit. And it's moving especially in the swing states. And so if this is a blowout for Biden, and I'm not saying it will be, but if it is... That makes it harder to bring it to the courts.
If you look at the history of totalitarian rulers, when they are in the minority, because certainly the Russians, the Bolsheviks, were the minority. And if you look at them, they don't care. The real question is, if he pulls a putsch, and there is, he's sort of hinting at it, if he pulls a putsch and there's a... and there's a group of military people who want to support him, that scares the hell out of me. I don't know about anybody else.
Well, yeah, I thought it was telling and quite frightening last night of the many questions that Pence did not answer was perhaps the most important one, and it was at the end of the debate when he was asked, when they pointed out that Donald Trump had never agreed to a peaceful transfer of power, and they ask him, if Trump lost and Biden won and Trump did not agree to the peaceful transfer of power, what would Pence do? And He did not answer that question. He got off away from that to another question, something he did want to talk about instantly. And that was more than any of the other questions that he didn't answer. That was the one I wanted to see him pinned down on. I wanted to hear what his answer would have been. Am I alone in that? Does anybody else want to hear what that answer would have been?
Well, I think the fly knows.
Totally agree. Yeah,
the fly knows everything.
The fly
Wait
knows
a second,
all.
We bring up the fly first.
I think.
I also wanted to hear him talk about abortion, and he did the same thing that Linda's talking about. He immediately began talking about the question before that he felt he had been cut off on after he'd gone like 5 minutes over his limit. He kept talking about that, never spoke about abortion. And I thought that that was astute because he would, we know, say he was completely against it. And that is like opposed to what most Americans think. So he ducked it entirely. And I think he did that. Although they both did, because she didn't answer the question about packing the cord either.
I want to get to that in a second. Go ahead, Jim.
But he did come back at the end, you know, and the only time you saw any real emotion on his face was when he said, "I believe in the sanctity of life." It was his one moment, you know, it was kind of near the end, and it wasn't quite in response to that same question. But he made it absolutely clear that he's pro-life. I mean, if there was any doubt, I think he made that clear.
Absolutely. And he also tried to distance...
Something we call anti-choice.
Yeah.
I, too, am pro-life. There's no part of me that is not pro-life.
Sorry, yes, I know. Yep.
I also... and then he made the distinction, although we believe that Justice Barrett will be independent in her thinking and
Sure.
Yeah.
The handmaiden.
handmaiden indeed.
We'll touch on that as well. I want to get to the... Go ahead, Linda.
Since we sort of touched on the female thing, just talking about the handmaiden, I want to go back to the visuals of last night. No, we did not see Pence yell, but he managed to interrupt and to go along and to... commit the same sins that Donald Trump did. He just wasn't screaming when he did them. But the overriding impression as I was walking in, I want to check with my female friends here and see if you've ever been in a place and been sitting there while a man rolls right over what you're saying, dismisses what you're saying, speaks on top of you, and does this regularly. And last night I watched a man do that to two women, Senator Harris and the moderator. And I thought, you know, I can't be the only woman sitting out here and going, man, I have been there before and that doesn't feel good. And I don't like that. Now, if you're talking about trying to get to the suburban college-educated women, that's not really a great way to go.
Rosemary?
Pence is not going to get those women anyway. I totally know what you're talking about. I was cheering Kamala, who did her best Maya impression. She turned into Mama and said, "I am speaking, Mr. President."
Exactly.
I was cheering that. Yeah, she also managed not to be rude or overbearing, but she stood up for herself. That is the definition of assertive. She was very strong last night, I thought. The roundtable the other day talked about how she didn't perform well in the Democratic debate, and she actually got a low rating from you guys. That surprised me, because I think of her in the Senate, where she is relentless in questioning people, and she showed that last night. She was not rude, but she had all the facts on her side, and she just kept talking despite the rude behavior. She made him look bad, which was great.
Jim?
So, you know, I pull data. What else can I do? I looked at a lot of polls this morning. But, you know, what I find interesting is the overall result was basically about 60% said Harris won the debate, about 38% Pence. But divided by gender, you had 70% of women said Harris won. And I think that absolutely backs up what you said. You know, I was sitting next to my wife, and I was...
That's fascinating.
watching her get angry, you know, and I was sort of thinking towards the middle of the debate, you know, Pence is doing better than I would expect. And she was just stewing. And it was sort of during the post-debate analysis where they said just what you just said. It was, you know, she was like, yes, that was it. You know, it was that man disrespecting her. So, you know, I really do think it was very clear that he was just told to try to steamroll, but the way he did it just came out as complete disrespect.
When you look at this, the back and forth, and I mean, I think everyone has agreed, I believe, on the panel that this wouldn't have changed anybody's mind. This didn't move the needle at all, right?
I don't know. It seems to be going Biden's way.
And I mean, Harris's this debate. Way.
Well, I think the debate is a manifestation of what people are thinking about the election. I think there's a projection into who won based on what people having made up their minds who they want to win.
Rosemary?
I don't think the debate changed anything. I think there is a trend going in the Biden-Harris direction. Alan's totally right about that. But the individual debate last night, no. Nothing she said surprised me. Nothing he said surprised me. So I think I'm like a lot of other people who have long ago made up their mind and were just waiting for October surprises before we finally cast our vote.
Now, we all love you, Rosemary, but you can be quite assertive. Do you think she was assertive enough?
I thought she played her. I would not have been good because I would have been steamrolling him. I'm too assertive. She played it. Our country does not like opinionated, strong women. Hillary Clinton's proof of that, the latest proof of that. But she last night managed to be knowledgeable. She got her say in. She was not disrespectful. I admired the way she did that.
Linda?
I agree with Rosemary. I thought she did a good job. Look, in this country, you're always, if you're a female, you're always going to face the ambition thing. Ambition is seen as a good quality in a man, not seen as a good quality in a woman. If you want to be president, you are ambitious. And that is a good thing, and you will need it if you want to be president, and you should be ambitious. And yet you will be punished for being ambitious if you are a woman, making it very hard for a woman to run for president or vice president. That is all true. I thought she did a fine job last night. I really did. She did not take the bait of interrupting him back.
Right.
She was smart enough, thinking on her feet, to say, no, let him do this. Let him be seen to be doing this again. And I thought that was a smart idea. I also just want to point out to everybody that the best line of the night for Kamala was probably, Mr. Vice President, please stop talking, okay? I think, now, the
just 30
the
seconds.
Best line
Go ahead.
Of the night. We all know that. But I also thought that Pence's best line of the night, when he went at her and said, you are entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts. And he used that line twice in there. And it's an excellent line. And it was an excellent line when Daniel Patrick Moynihan first wrote it and used it. A Democrat New York State.
All right. We missed Newsbreak, but that's all right. You know, it was interesting because he had already made the plagiarism slight, which I thought was interesting. I was waiting for her maybe to say something about that. Linda, to your point of a moment ago, though, I think it's interesting that, as you said, it wasn't just against one woman, but it was against two women. Susan Page, the USA Today reporter and Washington bureau chief, she is the moderator, and she basically was the one who was talked over the most because she kept on trying to shut him up and was unable to do so.
He made it very plain that women have no say and are not important and deserve no respect.
I would also say she managed not to roll her eyes and shrug and make dismissive gestures. She laughed, but she kept the gestures down. That also is really hard for an assertive, opinionated woman, I think.
For Kamala Harris, you mean? Yeah.
Right.
You know,
right.
What about, I'm sorry, Jim, but what about Susan Page's role in the debate last night, Rosemary?
Yeah, well, I asked this on the Media Project. We also discussed this, the role of moderators. What could she have done? She kept saying, thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President. I mean, you want to say, shut the F up. But you can't. You can't do that. So really, what were her options? And Judy Patrick had an interesting idea, which was that, or Rex did, I can't remember. We discussed this at length. She could have said, she could have stopped it and done what Chris Wallace tried to, except he was dealing with Trump, and said, right. Mr. Vice President, you have to stop talking. We're not getting anywhere, or something like that. I don't know. I don't think that journalists should be moderators.
She was on MSNBC this morning, and they asked her, did they feel that she should have a button to silence either party? And she said, no, I didn't have that technology, and I don't want that technology. I would have thought just saying your time is up would allow most people to stop talking. You know, there was a time where just that worked. The technology was, your time is up, and that would be good enough. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. And from Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, New York Farm Cidery with Outdoor Cafe, open 7 days, offering local hard cider merchandise and apparel, also through shipping. NinePinCider.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Jim Hendler, and Linda Ellerby, and we welcome your letters. We got a ton of them. Let's get to as many as we can. Yes.
Can I just throw in one thing real quick? Because I'm going to respectfully disagree with the rest of the panelists. I actually think this debate had a very powerful impact. I think for a lot of America, this was their first time to see Senator Harris in action. Mm. And I think coming across as someone who could be president will take a lot of people who might have felt uncomfortable, particularly that middle class women's vote that we keep talking about in a few states, and said, you know, this is someone who could do it. And I think that, again, we're talking small numbers, but that's a very important demographic. And I think that demographic saw someone who they might say, you know, now I think that's okay.
I agree.
All right, let's go through the letters. Alyssa says, I think that Kamala Harris missed an opportunity regarding the coronavirus when Pence accused her of not acknowledging the job the American people have done to fight it. She could have said that the American people are fighting the virus by following the advice of Dr. Fauci and strong governors like Cuomo, despite the conflicting and erroneous messaging on the part of the president. We go to John, who says, is there another presidential debate? What do you think about Biden showing up with an air horn to blast Trump every time he speaks out of turn? Well, I don't think there's going to, at this point, it doesn't look like there's going to be another
one. Nor is he going to do that.
Yeah.
But it's a funny line.
There's already one air horn. Let's see. We go to Bill. Sorry, folks. Pence won the debate. Pence is a better debater, better than the much lauded debater Kamala Harris, who I don't really know that she was much lauded, but that's okay, who in reality is inarticulate and wasn't half as well prepared as the vice president. Why couldn't Harris summon up a couple of sterling comebacks? She couldn't even defend her own legislation, the New Green Deal. She sputtered through her arguments. For the record, I'm a lifelong Democrat who will vote for the Biden-Harris ticket and who finds the Republican Party treasonous. I'm looking forward to AOC taking the center stage. There's a firebrand who can think on her feet, unlike Kamala Harris. Do you see AOC on the floor cutting Ted? I something about tearing him a new you-know-what, but I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway.
We get it.
Well, I get that. I don't know who it is. Go ahead. Rosemary, you were the loudest in your sighing.
I did. I watched the debate last night, you know, on an iPad hooked up to a hotspot, all kinds of technology. I don't understand because of the power outage. And it was with some millennials and young people, and they were all saying the same thing, that AOC would be amazing there. She would. But she also owns the new Green Deal. Biden and Harris have been very careful to disclaim. They won based on not being part of the AOC bandwagon or Bernie Sanders for that reason. They don't want to be seen as ragingly liberal or progressive, much less radical, which is what Trump and Pence are trying to paint them as. So she definitely did try to disown that, and she should. The plan that Biden put forth has many of the same elements as the new Green Deal. And I think that's fine. I like it. I'm a progressive, though. I'm not the middle of the road voter that she was trying to win. I thought she did really great on that. I'm glad to hear you're going to vote for them anyway. I agree with you on AOC. I disagree with you on her trying to. She's far from inarticulate. God, I'm more inarticulate. I can hear it now when I'm trying to defend her.
Tom says, Alan, I love that you always bring the historical perspective to an issue. If we don't remember history, we are condemned to repeat it. You remind us of Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini, and other dictators, and them to the current situation. This is one reason that excellent public education in America is so important. We also go to Stephen, who says the party of law and order can't even obey the simple rules of a debate. Biden and Harris have both missed the opportunity to point that out. Do they have to? I think most people get it.
There is a strategy here, Joe. And the strategy is we don't want to come on as being bombastic. We want the American people to know that they're going to have a reasonable, reasoned group of people in the White House who are going to be moderate in the way that Trump is not. And I'm sure that's what she thought going in, and I'm sure she was right.
Ricky says, hi, panel. The main question I wanted Pence to answer was the one about Trump taking away the ACA from 25 million people without any replacement. But, of course, he obfuscated. We go to...
Oh, he lied. He said, we have a plan. He didn't just cloud it. He lied.
We have a plan.
We have a plan. It's going to be much better. Yeah.
They've always had a plan.
With Rosemary and Alla on that, it is, as everybody in the world knows, it is very easy to tear down a barn. It is much harder to build one. For 4 years, Donald Trump has been claiming, we're going to have a great health care plan. We got to have it. No one has seen it yet.
Right.
And I thought, if somebody wants to say, did Senator Harris do a good job in this debate? That's the question where she came back with the, they're coming after this. If your kid is needs service.
Yes,
if you have a pre-existing condition, she really hit that one, and that's a very strong issue for the Democrats. So I thought that was a good moment for.
She had a good moment too of what I thought, which I want to talk to you all about, and that is when she came back after the question about packing the court, and she came about, you say you want to talk about packing the court, and I thought that was a really good point. But why won't they answer that question? Why won't it seems that can hurt both Biden and Harris. Why don't they answer that?
It's because let me just do this one little thing.
Go ahead.
I'm sure we're going to say the same thing anyway. FDR packed the court. He was immensely popular. He tried to pack the court and it didn't work. And the American people got real upset about it. Why in the world would these people come forward, the Democrats, and announce that they had any plans to add seats or pack the court? It doesn't make any sense. Just as Mrs. Wick always said, keep shut.
But can't you do that, Alan, by saying we have no plans to do that at this time?
Because at this, everybody knows you're lying.
Well, then you're talking about losing.
But when you don't say anything,
When you say at this time, everybody knows what that means.
Well, and even if you say we have no plans to do it at all, you're losing your progressive base.
Yeah.
So I think they have to walk a fine line on that one.
particularly Harris, though. She's not in the position to make that policy. That will be Joe Biden's call. So that explains her ducking it. And actually, Biden was never asked the question. Trump threw it out to him in one of his little obnoxious interruptions. He was never asked by Chris Wallace about the court.
Rose Marie says about the debate, is there really any win or lose here? Isn't a debate just for both sides to state their positions? It is irrelevant to me who won or lost. There is no winner or loser. Both sides are given opportunity to air their views and show us voters what and who we are voting for. Carry on, Roundtable. Thank you for a great discussion. Thank you. Just wanted to clear that up.
I'd like to address that.
Sure. Go ahead.
She's right about the – it's Rosemary, right, who wrote that?
Yes.
You're right about the winner-loser thing, but to me that was not the big picture last night. The importance of these debates and the question going into these debates was, will people see Kamala Harris as someone they'd be comfortable with stepping in if, God forbid, something happened to the president? Now, they've seen Mike Pence for 4 years. This was about that. No matter what got said last night, the overall question was that one. At least that is what I believe. And I think she did well in that area. What do you all think?
No.
I think so.
I thought she was terrific. And that she did the exact thing that Joe Biden is doing. Not make a mistake. You look at the New York Times today, Joe. I know you're our pollster looker, but you look at the New York Times today. He's beginning to run away with it, and there'll be people who are afraid that people won't come out and vote. On the contrary, we all know that Americans love to be on the winning side, and that's one of the reasons that these numbers are going up for him. You know, I think she didn't make any mistakes last night, and I think that serves the ticket well.
Well, and as far as the polling goes, it is the numbers are starting, as we indicated, are starting to pull away. What I find interesting, though, and this was a point made last night by I forget who, but I thought it was a good one, that given that 5-6 million people have voted so far, that in many cases these polls are exit polls. They're not of what people are going to do. It's what they've already done.
But do we know what they say?
Well, what we do know is the number of Democrats versus Republicans.
Yes, we do.
And we do know that number is much higher than the Republicans.
And you know who else knows it, Joe? The president knows it. Which is why he's doing everything in his power to put a stop to it.
Jim?
And I don't think we've seen the end of that. I don't think we've seen the real October surprise yet.
No, I agree.
Yep. I agree. You know, I just point out, somebody pointed out last night, one of the commentators, that this was the exact amount of time before the election that the famous tape of Trump disrespecting women. I'm not sure we're allowed to say which words on the radio.
We call it the Access Hollywood tape. And
the Access Hollywood tape came out
to protect our license.
Literally this many days in front of the election was the lowest point for Trump in the whole thing. You know, I think some of the things the Justice Department is doing, I think some of the things going on, I'm really setting up for, okay, if we're going to lose, what are we going to do? And frankly, it scares me because this guy has no morals. You know, we can be at war in a week.
You're exactly
if
right.
If he really thinks he's going to lose.
You're quite right.
I'm sorry, Wenda, that was your fear?
I just said that's my fear. I'm agreeing with you. My fear is he'll take us to war if he sees he's going down.
He'll do anything if he sees
he's going down. Anything. You're right. He's a corner rat in that sense.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rosemary.
No, I don't think it's anything that dramatic. I think it's going to be Barr and the Russian investigation. And you heard that. You heard some of that last night when Pence was talking about, Obama and Biden were spying on us. I think it's going to all be around the Russia hoax, which has consumed him for 4 years now.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we have many more letters, and we have a lot more to discuss, and we will do all of that right after this.
say you love me. I say I love you. Well, why don't you stop your crying? Dry your weeping. You know I love.
Play music this morning from singer-songwriter Johnny Nash, who died Tuesday at the age of 80. We always have our playlist posted at wamc.org/roundtable. Tom writes to us and says, if there was a man debating Pence, Pence would have been much more aggressive and overtalked his opponents. I don't think this is a female issue as being portrayed by the panel, says Tom.
He didn't do it the last debate when he was debating Tim Kaine, a man.
Good point. We go to Portia. It is very frustrating to me that the two candidates were fighting over the fact that they both wouldn't ban fracking. Fracking should be banned. Well, that is an interesting point, too.
Yeah, they were talking to Pennsylvania voters in that period.
Absolutely.
End of story.
You don't want to lose Pennsylvania.
Let's see. Carolyn says, if it is found that Biden wins this election and then contested by Trump, who does the police, army, secret service, follow if Trump is telling them to do illegal actions?
The big question. We are reassured again and again by everybody that, you know, the U.S. Marshals will come and escort him by the elbows out of the White House. I'm not so sure.
Yep.
Linda writes to us and says, while I thought Kamala did a great job, she didn't call out Pence for not answering the question about his health care plan. That, by the way, doesn't exist. She should have done the same thing to him that he did to her when he told her to answer the question about packing the Supreme Court. Eric says Biden should just accept questions from the voters since it's a town hall anyway. Will be a good look for him and terrible optics for Trump.
No. The stupidest question of the night, and I've already praised her for the quality of her questions, was when she used a question from an eighth grader. It was dumb. Eighth graders are not qualified to write questions for a presidential level debate. I don't like the voter questions.
I think I'm not reading too much into this. I believe Eric's point, though. And I love your point, but I think Eric's point is that...
And I want to make a point on that, too.
Okay, but if I think Eric...
I'm sorry, I listened to eighth graders for 25 years, and Rosemary, you're wrong. They are capable of asking intelligent questions to presidential candidates because they did it with us every 4 years. It's the question they chose was a dumb question.
There you go. I think you're in agreement on that. My point, I think the point of the letter, and I'm not positive, but I think the point of the letter is that instead of there not being a debate, that Joe Biden should just have a town hall meeting and just take questions and answer them for 90 minutes without Trump.
Well, he did that in Miami just this week.
You know what the problem is? Trump is so off the wall that the American people have become addicted to his craziness. Joe Biden is not Trump. Am I wrong about that, Rosemary?
No, I think you're right. I love that point.
Well, I mean, even, yes.
But, you know, one of the points last night that... Yeah.
Go ahead, Linda.
No, I interrupted someone, please.
No, you're on. You're up.
Your turn.
Oh, okay. Well, one of the points that was made last, I've lost my train of thought. Go ahead.
Okay. Come back to it if you think of it. It's
amusing. This age thing.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're talking about.
It's amusing watching all these serious journalists complain about one or two questions that Kamala didn't answer when Mike Pence refused to answer every question and the moderator asked him, all shouty caps. Maybe they should pay attention to that. And I do think that is being paid attention to. Oliver writes...
I think we did.
Wait. She handled herself brilliantly, and all of the results from the quick and dirty polling show that she won the debate. Now, what do you want?
At the debate, says Oliver, Vice President Pence dangerously asserted that plexiglass barriers have zero effect on thwarting the coronavirus. On even a remedial high school geometry quiz, this answer would get him, quite appropriately, a zero. This administration has access to the most brilliant minds in the world, and this is the shocking garbage they continue to foist upon us. It might be more appropriate to designate Pence's title Vice Dunce. or vice sociopath if he actually knew the correct answer, but purposely attempted to deceive the American people.
You know, there were two things that happened last night that got a lot of attention. We've already discussed the fly. You know, the fly knows, like the shadow.
Yes.
And the fly was sitting there for over 2 minutes and didn't do anything, as opposed to Obama, who grabbed the fly that was on him and crushed him.
Yeah.
There was that. Very symbolic, very important. The second thing, which was pointed out to me this morning by Speedy Gustina, our esteemed producer, which was that he had a pink eye.
Yeah, there was blood. There was a collection of blood in the right and left hand of his eye.
Which becomes, according to my source, sometimes goes with
coronavirus.
With the coronavirus.
It can be a coronavirus. I think in 0.9% of the patients that pink eye, or what is the, I forget.
Pink eye.
Yeah,
well,
conjunctivitis.
Conjunctivitis.
Yeah,
and we all got it at camp.
Right. Point. But that wasn't the crud.
No, that was the creeping crud. That was impetigo.
So,
or as one letter writer
reminded me, what I was going to say.
Impetigo.
Can I come back and say what I was?
Yes, there couldn't come a moment too soon. Go ahead.
Or I could talk about the fly more if you like. I've got some more lines on that. Last night I watched a little bit of Rachel Maddow afterward. I'm not usually up that late, quite frankly. And she said something that I also thought was true, which that was what we saw last night was Pence. Mike Pence sat there and defended a Republican Party and a Republican president that we don't see. Well, whoever he was defending is not what we're living. It's not the reality we're living.
No, it doesn't exist.
It does not exist. Everything that he was defending does not exist. We have the best economy. Education is fine. Everything is fine. The coronavirus is fine. Oh, blah, 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 blah. None of this matches the reality we see in front of our eyes. And that's what reality is. It's not a television show. Reality television, those of us who worked in television, always had an old joke. The minute you call something a reality series or someone told you about something and called it reality television, the very first thing you knew about that was it was not real.
Right. Yeah. It was fake. Let's see. Charles writes, will you discuss the fact that Karen Pence did not wear a mask at the debate? This was in defiance of the commission's requirement for attendees. Like her husband, she could not comply with the rules of the debate. Do you think security should have escorted her out of the room? This was a question that was asked last night in the coverage. Karen Pence apparently did wear a mask during the debate and took it off as she went to the stage to hug her husband. I don't. The only person she was in contact with at that point was the guy she lives with. I don't know if
they're not married.
Upset about that.
So I just would like to point out one thing about the fly.
Yes,
which
please,
is that
more on the fly.
Which is that Mike Pence's fly Twitter account now has 104,000 followers.
Are you one of them?
I refuse to answer.
You know, I was.
Fly has its own Twitter.
Yes,
account.
I must admit.
Well, we get an awful lot of mail here about conspiracy theory.
Yep.
And it did occur to me in the middle of the night that maybe the little fly was actually a tiny, tiny drone.
You need to get more sleep.
I want to read you a tweet from Roseanne Cash,
yes,
which I love, and it speaks to what we talked about before. She says, "I would like equal time," says Harris, "and every single woman ever in the history of humans."
Karen writes and says, "Can't Biden do the town hall debate by himself? That would be excellent for Joe." As Rosemary pointed, he's been doing those, but I think one reason Trump doesn't want a debate seems to be a virtual debate would preclude Donald from repeating his constant interruptions that cost him the first debate, says Mike. When you're virtual, your microphone is off and it makes it hard for him to interrupt.
He doesn't know what to do. That's his problem. He's losing. and he's looking for the magic bullet that will turn things around for him. So his misbehavior...
Well, he's got the cure for coronavirus. Yeah, well, isn't that enough?
Not only that, Linda, his invoking of the deity on his side last night,
yes,
forgiving him.
Yes, God.
That was pretty interesting.
You got God and a cure, how can you lose?
those are two pretty good weapons in the arsenal, aren't they?
And the big lie.
One of my favorite lines last night was when Pence said that he was talking about Trump and being ill, and he said the. And I'm quoting here. I wrote this one down. The care the president received at Walter Reed was exceptional. Precisely, I say to the world. The word exceptional is everything that applies there. It was the exception to the care everybody else gets.
Not according to the lying liar who says this is the treatment he got is what he wants for every American.
You're all going to get it. Mm-hmm. You get a car. You get a car.
My helicopter's right outside the window.
Hey, there's
on the lawn. I can see it landing now.
Rosemary, go ahead.
Trump was on Fox Business this morning.
Yeah,
and
Maria Bartiromo.
He said, of course, he said Pence won. He also said Kamala Harris was totally unlikable. There you go, women of the world. That's sexist. Said she was terrible and called her a communist. So the respect that Pence showed her is now completely out of the question for Trump.
We have just.
I don't think Pence. I think Pence was lying there too. I'm sorry. We know that Pence has no respect for women. This is a man who says he won't go into a room alone with a woman. I'm sorry. He could respect us enough to trust us not to put our hands on him. I'd have no problem not putting my hands on him. How about you, Rosemary?
I think I could resist. I don't know about his hair.
And yet,
run my fingers through that.
And yet another issue that I'm thinking about is here comes this hurricane to Florida.
Right.
The denial of climate change by the Trump team is extraordinary. Doesn't anybody slap themselves up the side of their head and say, hey, you know, we keep getting hit and hit and hit. Maybe he's been wrong about this.
Well, it certainly seems that it would be obvious, but it doesn't seem to be, right?
Nothing does.
But, you know, it's one of those things they can't back down on, you know. I think one of the things that's a challenge to them is they must have that energized base and they must get it out to vote.
Not enough.
And they can't risk, you know, that's why he can't put down white supremacy. That's why he... you know, is making some of these statements he's making. It's, you know, he proved last time you can win with 40% of the vote, and that's his only possible win strategy this time, is that plus stealing the election. And so, as was pointed out, if we can turn a big state, if a lot of things change, then it becomes much more difficult. But if it's close... And if he can get all of his folks out, so yeah, can't risk saying anything that's going to turn off the, you know, I won't use the term basket of deplorables,
but, right.
his base.
Let's take a break.
I'll be happy to.
Let's take a break.
That was right.
When we come back, we'll...
Only the percentage you got wrong, Linda.
We'll come back.
You're
we'll
right.
Finish our conversation up with our panel. We have another 45 minutes to go. First news with Rick Grant.
So much we could do, just me and you. Come on.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday, the 8th of October, 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Janet is in Powerless Del Mar, and she said, I just want to say I'm listening on my crank radio received years ago during a fun drive. Thank
great.
You.
Great.
We thought we were going to have to use that for the debate last night when everything was going out. We finally managed to get a phone so we could see it.
We can make a commercial out of that.
Yeah, we could. Absolutely.
We don't have commercials. Next we can make a promo, yeah.
A promo. An underwriting.
Instead of playing Jonas from Florida.
Eric says, I love Alan's point about America being addicted to Trump's annex. Does that make the media a drug dealer who is complicit in our national illness?
I'd like to handle that one. Yes.
Does that include us?
No.
Okay. I like that answer. Scott says, Kamala did a very good job communicating the importance of voting. Most people have their minds made up, but rallying voters is more important than ever. I hope Biden will do the same to get the vote out if another debate happens. Scott says, Kamala did a very good job communicating the... I think we got a double one there. Okay. Does anyone think that it's strange Pence hasn't tested positive for COVID? It would imply that he doesn't spend much time with the president or the president's staff. What does he do all day besides avoiding being alone in a room with women?
Well, he doesn't look for flies in his hair.
The question
he didn't
is,
get it from Hope apparently. Hicks.
The question is, what attracted what attracted the fly? In other words, is there some kind of goop on his head that the fly found attractive?
I thought the fly got stuck in hairspray.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Exactly.
At the beginning. But then I got into just the whole thing of it, and I really began to make up stuff. I said, okay, here we have a disease-transmitting insect sitting on this very white head, and this disease-transmitting insect, he is ignoring this thing. And I thought, very much like he is trying to ignore what his boss is doing most of the time.
And his debate
another
opponent.
Another disease-transmitting
insect.
I'll leave the name
okay,
to you.
Yes. Peter says, if Trump were to participate in another debate, I think it would hurt him more than it helps him, but it's very hard to believe that Trump accepts that, so I doubt he wants to sit it out for that reason. It's more likely that he wants to come across as an alpha male by intimidating Biden in person, which he can't do on Zoom.
Great letter. The problem for Trump is that he's losing, right? I mean, he's losing he's losing the election.
Right.
And so he has to throw some kind of
a wrench.
Political Molotov cocktail into the whole thing. He can't afford to be on because every time he's on, he loses. And if he's not on, he has no shot.
So this gets back to what we started talking about, but what is he doing to try to help himself win?
Don't look at me.
I know. I just, it seems so odd to me.
He's having his Justice Department interfere with elections everywhere they can. They
That's
just
right.
changed the laws, and well, not the laws, but they changed the rules on a long practice that would not let them, call into account an election till after it has occurred. They're now going to be trying to stop voting in places where they quote fraud is going on. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's their, if he can't win fairly, he's going to win unfairly.
So I have a question for you.
I really think he's pulling that.
So I have a question for you. Do you think that Barr has a mirror in his house?
He wouldn't see his reflection.
Well, he is so offensive to the rule of law in this country, and his going along with this neo-fascist is just extraordinary to me for a guy who pompously got before the Senate and every other place and talked to opined about how honest he was and how the rule of law was everything, and yet he does this stuff. I mean, he is no better. He is no better than
everything he has done, Alan, has been lawful because of the way things are set up. That's one thing that makes me crazy about law. It's not black and white. You can interpret it any way you want. And he does believe that we need an authoritative, almost imperial president. And if this guy Trump does it in a kind of bold way, that's good. Look how much he's done. Look how much he has changed the presidency in not even one complete term. So to Pence's, I mean, Barr is, would be happy to look at himself. He's proud of what he's done. He's proud of this record.
That is the issue.
Mm. Yep. And that's the scary part.
The answer to the question that was asked is what is Trump doing to win? And you're talking about he is trying to fix the election. He is trying to rig the election. Yes. That is his overall plan right now, and that brings us right to the Supreme Court.
Right.
He absolutely has talked about how he wants someone on the court, and that would be his person. But, you know, I don't like Amy Coney Island Barrett at all, but I can't really see her going along with what he's cooking up. And that really is a matter that the law would have to be interpreted in ways we have never seen before to twist it around to what Trump wants. So I think that's a losing strategy.
We go to we go to Duane. I thought Kamala Harris missed a chance to make a point on the Supreme Court. She could have pointed out that leaving the court without a justice for months and refusing to even meet with Merrick Garland, that was packing the court. We also go to Brian.
She did sort of come back on that and say, you're talking to me about packing the court, you know.
Yeah. Wow, we all knew Pence was a right-wing remnant of the moral majority. Who knew he is also a lying liar, just like his boss, just smoother? We go to Frank. As a former communications director, now retired, I sat in meetings where women directors and I, as a minority, were routinely talked over and had ideas we previously presented subsequently given credence at a later meeting. At our meetings, I love sitting next to one of my white female colleagues who, when I, men got started, would recite Mary Had a Little Lamb in a clear, strong voice, then lean over and say to me, they can't hear or recognize me until it's time to blame someone for something. She retired before I did, and I really missed her. Meetings were never as interesting after she left. Oh, a little reminiscence from Frank.
You know, so I have an interesting tidbit that I was saving to put in at an appropriate time. You know, I think Kamala did a wonderful job of controlling some of this perception, because when you actually look at the amount of time they were speaking, it was almost exactly equal. It was about 4 seconds different.
Right.
But when you look at the perception, because the way at the beginning she yielded and towards the end started taking control back, because you also look at the time as a histogram of over time, it's really interesting. I mean, she actually saw that happening and knew that, let him paint himself in the corner and then, you know, come back later. So it's interesting. I would have sworn he got, you know, 10, 15 more minutes than she did.
Brian said a few weeks ago, J.P. Miller said that Trump has proven he is not the person for the job. He will not go away from the media and will continue to be on Twitter. How does the panel feel about if the president is not charged and can continue for the rest of his short life to run for his second term?
Could somebody explain that to me? I'm sorry.
Meaning if he doesn't win this time.
Yeah, I don't get it.
The way I took it is that if he doesn't win this time and he is overturned in his attempt, that he will still be there creating trouble for the next 4 years. And would he run again in 2000?
Considering his ego and everything we know about him, the answer would be yes.
I don't think he'll run again. I think he'll cause trouble and stay in the media. But as a commentator, as an opponent, as maybe another media figure, I don't think he'll run again. He's too old.
Or as a jail cell inhabitant.
Well, that's right. What's going to happen over the next 4 years? All right. I want to get to two things here before we depart. One was one that Jim just mentioned, and that is the Justice Department easing election fraud inquiry constraints as Trump promotes a false narrative. The move comes as President Trump promotes this narrative of widespread voter fraud ahead of the election. For decades, federal prosecutors have been told not to mount election fraud investigations in the final months before an election for fear they could depress voter turnout or erode confidence in the results. Now the Justice Department has lifted that prohibition weeks before the presidential election. The move comes as President Trump and Attorney General William Barr have promoted a false narrative that voter fraud is rampant, potentially undermining Americans' faith in the election. A Justice Department lawyer in Washington said in a memo to prosecutors on Friday that they could investigate suspicions of election fraud before votes are tabulated. That reversed a decades-long policy that largely forbade aggressively conducting such inquiries during campaigns to keep their existence from becoming public and possibly chilling legitimate voting and campaign activities or interjecting the investigation itself as an issue for voters. That from the New York Times.
Well, they're right. I mean, if there's one thing that this guy has done, it's to cast doubt on the legitimacy of the peaceful transference of power or elections in this country. And that is completely sick from a number of perspectives, not the least of which is that he is taking the cherished institution of elections and saying you can't depend on them, nobody should, and that is why he's an anti-Democrat, small d.
Well, and I think, Joe, the detail of this order is that basically the particular exception that they're pushing, partly because it all falls under the Justice Department, is what they call misconduct by federal government workers. Now, that would include postal workers and military employees, i.e. the people who actually transport mail-in ballots in a large way. So in other words, what they're going to look for is, hey, if we can find one person being bad, we can claim this whole thing is fraud, and you know, we can throw it into the courts, and you know, we know suing everybody over everything has been Trump's main strategy of life for years. So really, I expect that this election is going to go way beyond election day, even if we see a major turnout. Hopefully it'll be big enough that they can't win in the end. But you know, I'd look at Belarus, and a month ago I said that couldn't happen here. Now I gotta tell you, I don't know. Massive voter fraud seems to be something that he would be very happy to do.
Here's a possibility on that. And I agree that he's trying to rig the election. And this has to do with something we were going to talk about today anyway, the disarray of the Republican Party at the moment. Okay, Republicans, many of them, are getting scared now about their own futures. Let's be clear on that. Because they, too, see that Trump is losing. And if they want to go forward, maybe they need to start disassociating. This is all up against the elections coming up for them, too, as well. And that's the entire House and one-third of the Senate. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm being a cockeyed optimist. But it seems to me that if Trump continues to be as unhinged as he has been in the last few weeks, and if he claims the election is rigged, and there is substantial reason to believe it was not, okay, and that the vote is fair, and if Biden is defeated, I mean, if Biden wins, I think there are Republicans in the House and the Senate who will make a decision at that point which way the wind is blowing, and it's not blowing in Trump's way, and will in fact defend the Constitution.
Maybe.
If they want to go forward and they see that it's...
Go ahead, Rosemary.
I think that is magical thinking, wishful thinking, and it's the same...
I think you're right, but I like
four
it at
years.
This point.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I can understand the appeal of it, Linda, but that's what we've been thinking for 4 years. Oh, surely after Ukraine, people are going to see the percent of people who believe in him has not wavered through anything. Not through anything.
And but, but the Republicans in Congress don't necessarily believe in him. They believe in staying in office.
I've not seen of courageous
action. But you're right. I'm probably in magical thinking.
Well, you know, I do think
cockeyed optimism.
Well, I do think that if Biden was declared the winner on election night, and that's a very big if, then what happens is a lot of the GOP immediately starts thinking about the midterms and trying to get the Senate back, especially if the Senate flips, or to get more of the Senate. So, you know, I could see that happening. In other words, I could see their survival instinct kicking in and saying, okay, we're going to run as, you know, we'll be better off as an opposition party that's legitimate right now than backing, quote, a coup.
All
so
right.
I'll hope Linda's right.
We'll hope for the optimism.
Based on past experience, you should give up all hope.
Yes, absolutely.
Linda is more often than not right.
Go ahead, Linda. Well, oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rosemary.
The best hope on election. On election night, whether Biden gets it or not, I still think we're in for a fight on the presidency. But some of the Senate races will not be so murky. They will be clear-cut, I hope, wins for the Democrat. And if the Senate flips, then in January, we have a chance no matter what, no matter what Trump does.
Senate's going to flip.
I think that's the best hope is that we win. And it does seem more possible. Lindsey Graham, his numbers are terrible. So is the Arizona race. Looks like it's going Democratic. It's very... Yeah. I would not have thought this 6 months ago.
It might really flip. That's what it might really do. The counting of... if these polls are at all right, and I suspect they are... then the Senate is going to go Democratic, and it may really go big Democratic. I mean, I wasn't even thinking about Lindsey Graham, although they're certainly taking that race very seriously.
It brings up the point, Alan, if as you say, we're talking about the polls, but if the polls are accurate,
yes,
and on the Senate side, and we do see another
Trump
term. 2, 3, 4 October right. surprises, and Trump is able to either legitimately or illegitimately win the election, then does it, well, especially the part if he legitimately starts to do something and his numbers rise, does that affect those candidates too, those Senate candidates?
Oh, yeah. Everything is attached to everything else. But right now, Trump is failing terribly, and the Republicans are failing terribly around the country. And here's the thing. This is a very popular election, this presidential election. And when people go to vote, they're going to vote for the top of the ticket, and then they'll go down the line. We've seen it 100 times before. And I think it could be a disaster for the Republican Party.
Let's go to Roseanne, who says, why don't people agree when Trump says the election is being rigged? It is. Trump is rigging the election. The
projection.
Post office closing polling places. The list goes on and on.
He's projecting. That's what he's doing. Of course, he's doing the rigging, and he's accusing the other people of the rigging.
Of course.
Ricky says I was disappointed by Mike Pence yesterday evening. Many of his answers sounded like they were directly from Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Donald Trump. Pence refused to agree that Trump should concede defeat if he actually loses the election. He had nothing new or different to say. He is a total sellout.
Can you imagine?
Comes from the same place the others he named comes from. He is one of them.
A radio broadcaster.
A right-wing radio talk show host.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Alan?
Can you imagine?
Another kind of super spreader.
Somebody wrote us a note and said, you know what flies are attracted to. And, you know, that's an interesting point.
It isn't honey.
What'd you say, Rosemary?
Where are you?
I said, it isn't honey.
Okay, no, it is not honey. Go ahead.
Oh, I forgot.
Okay.
Moving right ahead.
Joe says, I listen to the roundtable every morning along with many other conservatives and enjoy your dialogues. For a panelist to refer to me as a basket of deplorables once again was shocking and disappointing. You make it harder every day to keep supporting the lockbox.
Let me just say, don't take it out on WAMC. But I turned around to Joe earlier and I said, we should never use that term. All it does is alienate people, and why would we do it?
Norman Douglas says, as Pence talked, Kamala invariably looked at him with a smirk on her face. That was a devastating, though silent, attack on Pence. Yeah, she was really good at that.
You take your victories where you can get them.
Exactly. Let's see. One more, and then we'll take a break. Last night's debate was a perfect opportunity to get to know Senator Harris in the wild. Calm, prepared, charismatic. She killed it, said Elaine. And that is it for the letters I have in front of me. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Real quick, when we come back, we're going to talk about the handmaid story that Amy Coney Barrett served as a handmaid in a Christian group, People of Praise. We'll talk about that. I now know much more about People of Praise than I ever thought I would. We'll continue, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We will be right back after this short break.
I can't take it. I'm so lonely. Gee, I need you so. I can't take it. Oh, I wonder why you had to go.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so what we were talking about, I believe, of what we promised we would talk about, unless we have forgotten, is that the story about Amy Coney Barrett serving as a handmaid in the Christian group People of Praise. Follow along if you can. This is from the Washington Post. While Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett has faced questions about how her Catholic faith might influence her jurisprudence, she has not spoken publicly about her involvement in People of Praise, a small Christian group founded in the 1970s and based in South Bend, Indiana, the home state of Mike Pence. Barrett, a federal appellate judge, has disclosed serving on the board of a network of private Christian schools affiliated with the group. The organization, however, has declined to confirm that she is a member. In recent years, it removed from its website editions of a People of Praise magazine, first those that included her name and photograph, and then all archives of the magazine itself. Barrett has had an active role in the organization, as have her parents, according to documents and interviews that help fill out a picture of her involvement with a group that keeps its teachings and gatherings private. A 2010 People of Praise directory states that she held the title of handmaid, a leadership position for women in the community, according to a directory excerpt obtained by the Washington Post. Barrett's ties to the group, which has conservative stances on the role of women in society and other social issues, did not come to light until after she was questioned by senators during her nomination to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit in 2017. Senators are preparing to question her next week over her nomination to the High Court. Who would like to begin?
Well, as you know, Joe, I did have an interview with Chuck Schumer the other day.
Yes.
And he made it clear about how alarmed he was about this. And he did say that he has all kinds of task forces working on how to, you know, put a stop to this. Nevertheless, he made it very clear that was going to be very hard. I think we can pretty well accept the idea that she's going to do it. Do I want to? No. Do I think we ought to fight like hell? Yes. Do I think that, you know, we ought to be, you know, enraged by what's going on? Yes. But, you know, you got to hand it to Schumer. He's a realist. And he's saying it will be very hard to put a stop to this.
Rosemary Armail.
Well, I said all along it's going to be a 6-3 court, and I find it appalling, but it's not illegal. People voted to put a man who thinks exactly the same way, that would be Mike Pence, into high office. So as appalling as it is to me, the Republicans have played this right. I think they actually do have the right to pick a Supreme Court justice right now. The real injustice was Merrick Garland. So did Barack Obama have the right. And there's no way to go back now. And we can say, oh, two wrongs don't make a right. But you know what? They make for a 6-3 court. That is going to be really hard to change unless there's rule changes or you pass the court.
Okay, so I get that. But as let's so we're jumping ahead just a little bit. So when it comes to the confirmation hearings next week, Rosemary, what do you believe the question should be to Amy Coney Barrett about her affiliation with this group and her role as a handmaid?
Well, her role as a handmaid. I think the issues have to stick to the law. So what does this do for Roe v. Wade? What does this do for discrimination against women in the workplace? What does it do for women making decisions? I guess that has to do with health care as well. Her membership in this organization is it's completely – is it any different than Mitt Romney being, a Mormon? They think you can have more than one wife, and we looked at him for president. It's awful to a large percentage of the population, and pretty good to a slightly smaller percentage of the population. So I don't know what questions he would ask.
Wendell Ellerby.
The Washington Post is the damage.
Mm. It depends on who's asking the questions as well. I mean, we are talking about an organization that openly regards women as second-class citizens. Now, if this woman believes she is subservient to men, she does not belong on that court.
I'm sorry, what was that?
That was mom.
Oh, okay.
Just upset because I have two kittens who are trying to kill each other.
I thought it was something I said.
No, I did too. I was really worried. I didn't know we had such dissension. I didn't know it was caused by juggling kittens. You know, people often say that this job is hurting cats. I didn't know it literally was hurting cats. Go ahead.
Yes. This is one of the, you know, we have talked much about the white suburban voters that Trump is still trying very much to change. How many of those white suburban female voters do you think are going to stay silent? And yes, I suspect this will all go through anyway. Let me agree with everybody on that. But this is a time for women to stand up and say, this is not a woman that we want on the Supreme Court. This is not a woman who believes in women's rights. This is a woman who thinks men's rights are more important.
How do you make it happen? That's the question, Linda.
I don't know that you can make it happen, but I know that not trying doesn't change anything.
I couldn't agree more. I agree. You should try everything you can. But, you know, these people are scared to death of Donald Trump, these Republican senators. And they're going to do whatever they think they have to do to keep him in good, even though many of them will fall as a result of this because they don't think they have any choice. And so, yeah, people ought to be in the streets. They ought to be yelling. They ought to be writing. They ought to be saying, I'll never vote for you if you do this. Nevertheless, I don't see it happening.
You know,
I don't either, but I do think that when we look at this last week of this past week, not the last week of the campaign, but this past week, or when we look at what the polls are showing now, when we look at everything, I think that some things have made a huge difference and have changed this election. Obviously, the big one being the virus, which in turn affects the economies. So those are big ones. I think another big one, when all is said and done, one of the biggest ones is going to be Trump's performance at the debate last week.
Yeah.
His going off the rails, his unhinged, his brutal attacks, his lack of all civility, I think did change some minds. I think there were people who were appalled at that. And I think that is helping to scare the Republicans. Not enough yet. Then when you count in the fact that Kamala Harris did well last night against someone who tried to do the same thing, bully the opponent, only they just didn't scream. I think these are all good signs along with the polling, and this is no time to stop the fight about the Supreme Court right now.
Right.
We should not lay back and say, it's going to happen, let's just let it happen.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, it's going to happen, but let's not just let it.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Jim, you've been patient.
Yeah,
yes,
I agree with that. But, again, it's just another example. So just came out yesterday that there were a lot of materials that the Justice Department has been, quote, reviewing, unquote, rather than releasing to the Senate panels, including memos that, were written by the nominee, particularly, some things she's written that were very explicitly pro-life. You know, they're claiming these weren't judicial decisions. But the point is, normally these things go into the record. So once again, we see this, put all the information out there and then make the decisions with full transparency. But, hiding information, trying to keep things from coming out, it just drives me crazy. It's not what our government should be doing.
Okay, so I want to ask all of you this question. You're a Republican senator. You're up for re-election. You can't go against Trump. And you know that the president is behaving very badly, and you go home and you see your husband or your wife, and they tell you that, and you just know that this is crazy. What in the world do you do? Is this just time to be a profile in courage and stand up and say, this is just wrong? Now, we know that the two United States senators who have said they're not going to vote that way have political interests in not doing it. One is going to lose in Maine. So what do you do? I mean, how do you convince these people that this is the moment to shine?
Mm. Good question.
Only thing that will change.
You have to convince them that not supporting Trump is in their interest going forward.
How do you do it?
If enough people can write letters and can say to their senators, I'm voting against you this way, that'll change it. But, I don't see
that happening. It will not change.
I'm the one who's saying, yeah, we have to fight. Okay, that's fine. Go march in the streets, all that stuff. It's still going to happen. So why waste a whole bunch of time on it? This is not just about putting an anti-woman vote on the court. This is about a 6-3 conservative court, which conservatives want, Republicans want. It's why senators like Romney are going to vote for it. This is the holy grail. Of course they're going to vote for it. So Democrats need to be thinking ahead, just as they do about the election. What are we going to do if Trump doesn't give in? Because he's not going to. So what's our next step? Do we have that when there's a 6-3 court and they begin ruling in ways that we object to deeply? What are we going to do?
legislation as an answer, changing the makeup of the court, changing the rules of the court. This is all within the grasp of Democrats. I love the idea that, yes, all of those records from – they do that with Merrick Garland. They wouldn't even let his record come out. That has to happen. So journalists can work on this. All of these things are things that are not only fighting back, but they would have some effect beyond symbolic.
Mm. Alan? No.
No, I mean, I wrote a column in which I listed all the things that could be done and people should be doing. And I think Rosemary has just pretty well gone over that whole list of things that we ought to do. And I don't think you give up under any circumstances. And I think all those other things, in terms of putting new people on the court or changing the legislative priorities that you do that the court has to consider, all of those things are legitimate things to be considered, but not now. Not when you're ahead by 10 to 15 points in an election. Why screw it up?
Right. Right.
The one thing that really can be done, right, and this is kind of how I would hope Biden will start to answer that question about packing the court, is flipping the Senate, and a significant flip in the Senate means that you can go to a legislative way of doing it. So again, Roe versus Wade
right.
being overturned goes
right.
away if you pass a federal law, unless the Supreme Court is willing to, you know, really go out beyond where they've ever been.
Do you have any doubt that they will?
I think it gets harder, and that's all you can do is make it harder and harder.
I think one of the reasons the election returns are so important now is that if it's an overwhelming victory for Biden, I do believe, and Trump is out of there, I believe there is going to be some real recalcitrance on the part of the Republican senators to do even more, and the court to do even more mischief.
All right.
Well, and I think that's why they all want to get this through before.
Yep.
We are out of time, but I thank everybody. You're all great today. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Rosemary Armeo, Jim Henler, Linda Ellerbe, be well. Thank you very much. Alan Chartok, good to have you here. Thank you.
Good to be here.
We'll be back right after this.